Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 15 of English with Tim, the podcast where you can improve your grammar and learn to really master English vocabulary. I'm Tim Sexton, a polyglot English teacher, writer, and world traveler from the U.S. I'm also the author of Words for the Test, where you can learn hundreds of words and expressions for talking about data for business or for IELTS Task 1 academic writing. You can find Words for Numbers at patreon.com/wordsfornumbers. This week, I'm going to do something a little bit different. No, it's going to be very different. I've talked about very serious stuff, you know, grammar things and vocabulary and how to learn it and things that are happening inside of your brain and mechanisms and blah, blah, blah. This week, I'm going to do something else because I want to and I'm tired. And I think you'll be entertained. I hope you will be. So, first thing is I'll report something from my life. Which is that for my birthday, which was at the end of April, I got some money and I chose to spend it on something called Wondrium. Wondrium is a website, streaming website, where you can watch video lectures by university professors. These aren't exactly university courses, but this website started off, you know, maybe 25 years ago. As something rather different because, you know, the internet wasn't as big a part of our lives as it is now. And at the time, you would buy, you know, these DVD lectures and a book that came with the lectures, and you'd sit down and you'd watch them. And that content, well, it was about all kinds of topics. There was history, there was religion, there was philosophy, cooking, travel, you name it. It was all there. And so some years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, they transferred, most or all of that material to Wondrium. And, before, you know, you would have to spend about $250 or so in strong $1999, to get a lecture set. And now it's like, to sign up, it's like $166 for 2 years. I know this sounds like an advertisement. It's totally not. So anyway, I subscribed and I started watching some different lectures. In the beginning, I tried to watch about one lecture per day, and they're typically about 25 or 30 minutes, and I chose to watch one on language histories of the world, which was really interesting. And it wasn't too hard to watch because I knew some of the material. Some of it was unfamiliar, you know, language families in the Pacific, Pacific Islands. I'm lost, you know, it's talking about relationships between these different language families, subfamilies, and it was kind of confusing at times, but that's, you know, natural when you go into new material. So after that finished, I was kind of torn. When you're torn, it means that, you know, you can't, you have difficulty deciding between two or more options because you have strong feelings about each of them. I was torn between several options, and the one that I chose was a history of India. And so it starts off in prehistoric India and talks about the first people who moved to India, who got there apparently about 30,000 years ago. And they were, they came apparently, you know, almost directly from Africa. Of course, they had, you know, had to go over land quite a ways, but they made their way to India, and they have supposedly a lot of genetic similarities to people from Africa. And if you see these people who live mainly in the north of India, they, some of them look very African, others less so, you know, they've been there for a long time, and other people, other waves of people came in and they mixed, to varying degrees. So, you know, you don't have the same appearance they originally had. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, that later some people invaded India from the northwest, from the steppes into the northwest of India, what's now Pakistan, actually. And from there, the lecturer started talking about the Rig Veda, and the Rig Veda is the earliest Hindu holy text. And I just got curious, you know, this is a book that, you know, people have heard of, and I have never really seen it. So I went and I found it online and read just the first chapter of it, which is, you know, about a page long, out of curiosity. And it was interesting. There was a god in the text called Agni. And I thought, Agni, that's an interesting name for a god. And I checked, and it's actually the name for the fire god. And I thought, oh, wow, that's really interesting because it's similar to Russian, Agonь, and also to the Russian name, actually not originally Russian, it's more of a Latin name, Ignat, which in English is Ignatius. This is one of those nature names, you know, like stone or wind or fire or whatever. So, you know, Ignatius. Also in English we have ignite, which means to set something on fire, to cause something to start burning. Now you might say, why ignite versus set on fire? Ignite just sounds more technical. And also we have igneous rock. Igneous rock, that's a term from geology, and igneous rock is rock that was produced by volcanoes, you know, with fire. Also, this made me think, this, you know, kind of group of words made me think of Spanish fuego, which is not too similar to ignite, but if you take off the F and you turn it into a silent H, which is what often happens, actually, in Spanish, Fs and Hs change into each other. For example, you get last names like Fernandez and Hernandez. You know, same last name, F to H, H to F. So if you take fuego and you take off the F, you get huego, which is not so different from Agonь. What else was there in there? Also, one other interesting thing was that apparently a person, last name in India for a person who has memorized four Vedic collections is called a Chaturvedi. And obviously, if you speak a Slavic language, you know that Chetiri in Russian is four, and Chetiri in Polish is four also. So it was surprising to see these closer similarities between Russian and languages spoken that are in India. I know that they're part of the same big family, but nonetheless, I didn't expect to see things that similar. Another one that was in there that was similar was Nagasa, which is snake. So you might say Nagasa, snake, in Russian, Zmia, not so similar to each other. But if you change things just a little bit, take Nagasa and you take the G, 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 and you turn it into a K, because the G and K are the same. One uses, the vibrations of your vocal cords. The other one does not. So it's just one step away from Nagasa to Nakasa. Also, the letter S has a tendency to appear in words and to disappear in words. This is true across languages, except for probably languages that don't have the letter S. But in French, for example, you know, the word for state is état. And there are a lot of other words. None come to mind immediately, but where the words differ between English and French or English and another language just by the presence or absence of an S. So you have Nagasa, which again we transformed into Nakasa with a K, and then you just put an S on the beginning, Snakasa. So you're getting a lot closer to snake. Also, it's kind of similar to Russian Zmia a little bit. The M and the N are close to each other, and the Z and the S, of course. So do two changes, and you go from Zmeya to Sneya, also not far from snake. Okay, that's enough. That's my little detour into North India and back. I wanted to tell you also about an incident from my life earlier this year. I was in the basement of a school alone at night, and there were iron pipes that were coming from the ceiling into the floor and from the floor into the ceiling at many different strange angles. It was a very strange place. The floor of the place was very rough, and it was dark in there, and there was also a room that was kind of sticking out from the wall, also made of a very crude poured concrete, and there was a window with prison bars on it, and I walked towards the window, and as I was walking, I realized that I had no shoes on because the floor was very rough, and I felt a very evil presence inside of this room, and I didn't know what to do except that I wanted to warn everyone, which was a strange thing to want because no one was there except for me and this presence, if indeed anything was there. So I ran up towards the window and felt this evil presence inside the room, And as I got closer, the scream grew inside of me, and as I got close to the window, I grabbed onto the bars with both hands, and the scream just went back into my body, into my heart, and into my blood, and spread, and I looked inside the window and saw that there was a devil made out of an orange flame that was itself made out of orange sherbet ice cream, and he was sitting at a desk and just calmly writing on paper with a fountain pen, writing, taking the paper, putting it off to the right-hand side, and behind him there was a bookshelf full of several books, and this was the point when I woke up, and I was quite cold. You know, it gave me the chills thinking about this. Made me quite afraid. I often have nightmares, but I usually enjoy them, actually. If I describe to you just the content of what happened in the nightmare, you would say, that sounds pretty bad, Tim. But in reality, I wake up and feel really relaxed and generally write them down. That's more or less what I did in this case. And I thought about this. I've thought about the ice cream devil many times since then. And the ice cream devil, well, I think his power and what made him so terrifying was simply his ability to silence anyone who would warn. He couldn't actually do anything, it seems, but just his ability to silence you and make you know that he exists, but make you unable to talk about him, was quite frightening. Another thing that happened, well, I was talking with my uncle, who is a nurse, and he told me a story about what happened when he went to work one day several months ago. He was working, and unexpectedly a man ran into the hospital where my uncle was, and the man had blood all over his arms. And he said, come to the parking lot. It was an underground parking garage. Come to the parking lot. You've got to help me. Come on now. And my uncle was, you know, he's used to seeing things. He's you know, a medical professional, but this was different. So he reluctantly followed this man down the steps into the parking garage, and there was blood all over the floor. And the guy was apologizing. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I made such a mess. And the man explained that while he was driving to the hospital, well, my uncle was obviously expecting a dead body. While this guy was driving to the hospital, he had run into a deer and killed it. And he was going to the hospital because his wife was going to give birth to their baby. And this man did not want to lose the meat. So he took the dead deer, brought it to the hospital, skinned it, removed the skin from it, in the parking garage, while his wife was threatening to give birth in the back of the car. So, I want to tell you another story. In this case, it's about a workplace where I was. Many years ago, there was a factory that I worked at, and factory is being kind of generous because the place didn't have a roof. Well, parts of it had a roof, but the place where most of the employees did most of their work did not have a roof. Storage areas had roofs. And, you know, it's Ohio, Southwest Ohio, and it gets cold, not super cold, but it was, you know, almost 16, 17 years ago. So it was colder back then, let's be real. And at times there was snow, and it was not a nice place to work. And I just wanted to tell you what was in the refrigerator at this place. The people who worked there were very blue-collar. Blue-collar means working class. A bunch of guys. I was the only one, I think, who had a college education, a full college education. And there was a lot of anger. There was one particular guy who got really angry one time, and he pushed a cylinder full of oxygen off of a platform. And this oxygen cylinder was about as tall as a person, and it had a little cylinder, another small cylinder on the top made out of a softer material, and it was about as thick around as a pencil, and this thing had maybe 28 atmospheres of pressure in it. And so when the thing fell, that second soft cylinder on the top broke off, and 28 atmospheres of pressure, it was 2,600 PSI, So 14, one, yeah, it was 280, something like 280 atmosphere, some outrageous amount of pressure inside. The valve, the cylinder on the top broke off, and it shot like a rocket across the parking lot. And I just ran. And because I'd heard stories about this place, and people were, the other workers were standing on the platform up there and yelling, "Look at Tim run like a rabbit. Look at them run. Look at the coward run." And when I came back, they said, "Actually, you did the right thing. We were making fun of you, but you did exactly the right thing." So that's just one piece of the blue collar anger that was, in evidence in this place. And no one ever took care of the refrigerator. And, you know, I didn't want to store anything in there because I'd open it up and you'd have these bottles of sports drink and Sprite and Coca-Cola and that had been in there for so long that there was mold growing on them. And you could see these kind of ghostly, like wet blobs of black mold with their fingers hanging down into the clear sports drink. It was absolutely revolting. Revolting means completely disgusting. And so I took all of these things out and I threw them in the trash. And while I was doing this, there was a movie playing on the television, and it was a copy of Alien, you know, the 1979 horror smash hit. And it was a copy of it starring Klaus Kinski. And I pointed that out. I said, "Guys, look, it's Klaus Kinski." And everybody just laughed at me because, you know, they didn't have any idea who he was. And I cleaned out more mold, not just moldy, you know, bottles with mold inside of them, but mold from inside of the refrigerator. I should have worn a mask. I probably gave myself permanent brain damage from being around this stuff. But the worst thing was these bags of bread. So there's a very common brand of bread in the United States. It's called Wonder Bread. And it's anything but a wonder, actually. It's just really soft, fluffy, white bread with, you know, very little nutritional value. You could take it and, you know, crumple it up into a little ball about as big as a, I don't know, maybe 2 centimeters around from one slice. And inside these bags of Wonder Bread, which had a kind of a blue and white checked pattern on them, the bread had completely turned to liquid, and there was just liquid mold and slime inside of the bag. And, you know, as the bag, I picked up the bag, I could feel the cold, rotten liquid flowing back and forth in there. I almost threw up, and I hope I didn't make you guys sick listening. But, yeah, so I cleaned out the refrigerator at this place. I have one more thing I want to tell you, which, is about my trip across France. In 2006, I walked across France. Maybe I told you about this or mentioned it. I walked from Normandy, northwest France, to Toulouse in the southwest, to Marseille in the southeast. Almost, I should have gone to Italy. I should have gone that extra 10 or 12 days at a fast walking speed and gone to Italy. But I can say that I walked across France. Anyway, there was a particular point in my trip where I was walking, and I had not had the opportunity to wash my clothing in about, you know, 4 wash cycles, or, you know, 4 cycles of wearing it, rather. And of course, the worst part of that is the socks. Now, I should have just been, you know, more, I don't know, I should have just taken the socks and everything and thrown them in a sink somewhere in some provincial bathroom in some park and, you know, washed them with hand soap. It would have been better than doing what I was doing, which was, oh, it was not good. Oh, it was extremely uncomfortable. And so I was walking towards the end of the day. And, you know, at the end of the day, around 4 o'clock, even if it's the sun's going to go down at 10, you are thinking in the back of your mind, oh, it's starting to get dark, and I've got to, you know, find a solution here. So I was walking along this river. It was quite flat, and I went under a bridge, and it was quite a big bridge. It was a highway bridge, and underneath it, I could see several, like kind of a group of Roma who were camped out under there, and they did not look friendly, in contrast to many of the Roma that I met while I was walking. In one case, I got quite sick, and I looked terrible, and they actually gave me 50 euros in cash. Yes, the Roma gave me 50 euros in cash. So as I was continuing, I walked along this road, and a car drove past. It was a black Clio, and inside was a man in his probably mid to late 40s. He was wearing a black silk dress shirt that was open at the chest, and he had a sunburnt chest, salt and pepper hair that was quite oily and curly on his chest and on his head, and aviator sunglasses. And he drove past at like a sub-bicycle speed. It was real slow, and he tracked me with his head, and I just thought, oh... I got a little bit ahead of myself, though. As I was walking before this, I saw along the river these very tall bushes, and they were very neatly cut, very neatly trimmed, and there were cars parked behind them. And I could see the cars, at times I could see the edge of the car, and the car would be shaking a little bit, it seemed to me. And I didn't understand what was happening. Then that guy drove past, and it all became clear. And so... it reminded me of a place in my hometown. It's called Burnett Woods. Burnett Woods is a place where gay guys meet and do whatever they want to do. And if you don't want to be around that, then you just don't go there. And so as this guy drove past, I thought, my God, it's like Burnett Woods. You know, I've got to walk past this park as quickly as possible. I got to the end of the park. That guy left, and there was a nice tree, kind of small, with some sand under it, on the left-hand side of the road. On the right-hand side, there was a big triangular-shaped large garden or small farm with an older man tending the vegetables there. And I crossed the street and talked to him, and I said, "Do you know, is it okay if I put my tent up here?" And he said, "Sure, no problem." And I asked him, "Is it, you know, going to be a problem with those guys? Do you think those guys will try to bother me?" And he said, "No, they just do whatever they want. They'll leave you alone. Don't worry." And I thought, okay, this is good. Soon after, the guy came up in the black Clio, and he parked his car and came up and started speaking English to me. I speak some French, and so I was surprised, and I said, "Well, you know, why are you speaking English to me?" And he said, "Well, you know, I can just tell you're from the United States. Maybe I have a look about me or the clothing, who knows?" But he was very friendly, and he immediately asked me, you know, where I'd come from and what I was doing. And I told him, you know, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. And he said, "Cincinnati, Ohio? Oh my God, I love Cincinnati, Ohio. Do you know Burnett Woods?" And I thought, oh my God. And I said, "You know, I've heard of it, but I've never been. I've never been there. Only heard of it." And he said, "Do you want to sleep in my mom's house?" And before I could say no, he picked up his phone and called his mother, and his mother was arguing with, "No, I don't want to do it." And he said, "Mom, this is not some prince I'm trying to bring home and make love to. Don't you understand? This is a boy from Cincinnati, Ohio. This is the chance of a lifetime. Don't you understand?" And she said, she just, "No, say no, no, say no, say tu." And he hung up the phone, and right after he hung up the phone, he said, "That bitch." And I was rather shocked at the whole thing. And he said, "You know, Tim, I've got my own apartment. You can sleep there. I've got a washing machine." I was thinking about my absolutely disgusting clothing. And I live on the top floor. And, you know, nobody bothers me up there. I like to live on the top floor in places. And I thought, this is not... Probably he doesn't want to do anything bad. He seemed like he was okay. But come on, what was he doing in this place? And it was a little bit sketchy. Sketchy means uncertain or dangerous. Told him, "Let's meet for breakfast tomorrow." I didn't want to hurt the guy's feelings, and I also didn't want to risk my own safety. So he said, "Okay, we'll do that." And the next morning, I met him for breakfast, and we met a couple other colorful characters, who I don't have time to talk about this time. And he gave me about 10 euros in cash. He bought my breakfast for me. He gave me a phone card. That is all for today. I hope you enjoyed it, this change of pace from what I usually talk about. I hope to hear you next time, or that you will hear me next time, and I hope to read your reactions in the comments. Thanks for listening, and see you next Monday.